So the prayer opens. It is, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in Duval as it is in heaven." This is always, this has been one of my favorite titles because it has so forced me to be thinking about how I take this big thing called Christianity, this big idea of the kingdom of Jesus, how I take that prayer and I practicalize it. That I have an ownership of it. I don't just simply pray it, but I'm praying it and I'm trying to figure out how to do it, how to implement it, how to present that to the community that I live in. And for all of us, it's to be the same way. It doesn't matter which town or city in the valley or wherever you live, that focus should be, I want to be an ambassador, a representative, kind of a felt agent of that prayer. And so we've titled this series as we have because what we're looking at as a church is kind of our vision, our values, and our vibe. And again, this is a long series. It was meant to be a countdown series to get into the hub. And I'm stretching it out as far as I can, man. Like, I'm doing my best. I'm like, oh, we're going to do one word at a time, all right? But, you know, that's what we're doing. So still probably not going to get there. But nonetheless, I think it's really important that we do take the time and sometimes to do a deep dive into the things that make us tick as a church, because again, this is the way we capture our flavor. Different churches capture their flavor in a different way. I really believe the church is like Baskin Robbins. There's all sorts of different flavors in the valley, but it's all Jesus's ice cream shop. It's all Jesus's Baskin Robbins, right? But we capture the flavor in different ways. And so for us, what we've looked at in the series is, first of all, we started with our why. Just why do we exist? Why did we try to put this together? Why did we draft the thoughts that we drafted? And from that, we really just said, hey, man, we want to be helping people believe life is better with Jesus. And that phrase, I want to just quickly let you understand that much of what that phrase is about is for those who follow Jesus to actually embrace that Jesus's way is the best way to live. Because sometimes we're going to be tempted to not do it his way, but to do it our way or the American way or my personal wishes way. And yet Jesus's way is best. It's hard. It's hard, man. Doing kingdom stuff is hard. The Sermon on the Mount is hard. To embody the fruit of the Spirit, it is hard. It means we can't do it in our own strength. We have to lean into the strength of Jesus to do this in and through us for the sake of the world around us to make their lives better so that they may then in turn come to have life in him as well. So our why is strategic to really get us thinking like, how do I live like him every day? From that, we talked about, well, then how do we try to rally around the why? And the how has all sorts of things, right? We want to seek to be like Jesus and err on the side of grace and take the Bible seriously. All these things. In fact, even all the way to last week, we kind of pinnacled with, hey, man, and I want to be thinking about who can I invite? Who can I reach out to? Who can I bring along in this journey? Who can I show so much love to and just be behaving so awesomely toward that they go, this Jesus is compelling. Tell me more. I want to understand more, right? That's our how. But today we are going to dig into our what, right? So the first point is kind of vision. The second point is values. This third point is about our vibe, the environment that we want to create and establish, the feel that we want people to have. That's our heart today. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and pray, get ready for today, and we're going to dive in and look at one of the first of four things when it comes to what we want people to feel when they come to Redemption Church. And so let's pray together. Jesus, I thank you. I thank you that you have a lofty task for us. Right? You didn't set a low bar as far as what you expect of us. Your bar is very high and yet incredibly beautiful because it is so upside down and backwards from the way the world gets stuff done. Right? I always just think upon just the challenge you gave to us to go low, to be humble, to serve others, right? To really, in many ways, just look at your pattern of life and duplicate that pattern. So I pray that we own that, right? Even more than just our vision, values, and vibe. I pray that we own the reason we do this is because we're showcasing you and we're showing you and we want to emulate you so that others can come to see you in a way that maybe they haven't seen or they perceive that that's not what followers of Jesus really do. That we would be that. That we would be walking billboards of your goodness and your grace and your love. And so I ask that you show us today how to do that well, how to be what you want us to be and own what you want us to own. And so we thank you, Jesus, for this day and for your grace and your goodness in your good name. Amen. So I don't know if you've ever had this circumstance. I'm going to guess that you have because I know Ellie and I have before. And it's the idea when you hear about a new restaurant, maybe you've never heard of it before, or it's brand new, or maybe it's been around for a while, but you hear about it and you're like, man, we got to go check that out. Right? And so you kind of pile into the car, you go to the location, but as soon as you pull up, you have that uh-oh feeling. Right? Because you pull up and you're like, wow, paint's kind of faded and chipping. And there's weeds in the flower beds, and half the lights on the sign are flickering and not working. And you're like, is this a good idea? I've got some reservations. I didn't make reservations. I just have reservations now. Is this the right place? But then you remember, Guy Fieri, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Drives. Right? So it might be a dive, so it might be awesome. Because some of the places that look terrible have the best food. That's what Guy says, right? So I'm going in. It might be awesome. And then you walk in the door, and you are anti-greeted by the anti-host. Right? They just seem almost like you wrecked their day by walking in the door, right? I'm busy on Tinder, bro. I don't have time to find you a table, you know? So you're like, this isn't really fun. But finally, they're like, follow me, right? So they take you to a table that seems like a two-year-old wiped it down about 3 seconds ago, and it's still wet, and they throw the menu on the table where it sticks. You know that one? I hate that one. Hate that one. It's like, man, I gotta peel this thing off the table, man. And then after about 11 and a half, 12 minutes, your server shows up, but they have no like tableside manner whatsoever. And they even have kind of that disposition, that vibe that you're like, if we put them out, we might get a boogie in our BLT from them. We do not make them angry, right? Just whatever. So what's crazy about that is before you have so much as sampled a bite or put your order in, you've had an experience. Right? You've had a poor experience. You've had a negative experience. It's amazing how that happens. And about the only thing that might rescue the experience is amazing food. You're like, oh, it's like the soup Nazi. I get it. That's what this is, you know? But for the most part, even if the food's awesome, you're gonna be like, no, that's not so great. I think what's more interesting about that scenario is how it makes us feel. Like, if you analyze your emotions as it's happening, you go from like being kind of, hey, we're going out to dinner, to suddenly being kind of pensive, a little critical, a bit frustrated, you're agitated, you're shifting around. And if it keeps going bad, all you can do for the rest of the night is think, oh, this Yelp review is gonna crush them, right? I'm just gonna write a scathing and one star, just gonna nail it. But here's the crazy thing on the flip side. You ever gone to a restaurant where you're like, wow, that was warm? That was inviting. Those people are amazing. I had so much fun. It just felt so great. What's crazy about that is you might even go into those environments and the food's like fine, but the people and the ambiance and just the thing that's there, you're like, man, that made my night. That was a great outing. See, that is an altogether different kind of thing. Like for me, in some ways, just to be really open, one of my favorite places to go is Ixtapa. I love Ixtapa. Now, I'm not a big Mexican food guy, but every time I go in there, there's Ramon. He's giving me a handshake, giving me a hug. We're chit-chatting. He's like, there's your booth right there. They know what our drink order is. They know what our food order is. They're always just trying to welcome and invite and care for and all of that. I'm like, man, I love going there. If I'm having a bad day, I go to Ixtapa. Like, those people just inflate my balloon, man. It's awesome. I love that. Now, I lead with that because I think to set that juxtaposition of a restaurant that you go, man, that was great, and a restaurant where you go, wow, that was an awful experience, hopefully that can give you a little bit of the emotional bandwidth to then understand a little bit what I'm getting at today when it comes to the subject of the church. Because I think the same factors and the same emotions come into play when it comes to somebody checking out Redemption Church or any church for the first time. In fact, I would go a step further and say those factors are way more heightened when somebody is checking out a church than when they're going to a restaurant. Because when you go to a restaurant, it's kind of familiar. Like, all restaurants are basically have the same structure to them. And so you kind of know what you're getting into. But when you go to a religious institution, you go to a local church, man, you do not know fully what you're walking into. You don't, right? I hear the laughers. It's true. We all go, that's true. That guy's right. I just didn't say it out loud. All right, so it is, because if you go to a high liturgical church, that's one set of experiences that is very different than if you go to like a very contemporary, very upbeat, very modern, like a mega church. it's going to feel dramatically different between those two environments, right? And then you think about the kinds of people that may be coming into any one of those environments. You have some people that are like, you know what, we're church shopping. We do the church thing. We've been doing it for years. But when they come into a new church as a church shopper, they're still kind of like, we got to check this out. Or think about the person that left years ago. Maybe they got hurt or whatever it is, but now they're finally coming back for the first time. Or even think about the person that's never done the church gig before in their life. They're like, maybe when I was a little kid, my grandma drug me to Sunday school, but I haven't gone for 35, 40, 45 years, right? There's going to be all sorts of processing that's going to be happening in their mind. And honestly, I would say in some ways, if we're just really blunt about it, the deck is sort of stacked against a person initially feeling like at home or comfortable or this sense of ease when they come into a space. It's just the natural climate of things. In fact, if you've church shopped before, you know. And again, there's a whole slew of things that an individual or a family is trying to work through as they're thinking about a church, right? They're thinking about it kind of just like socially, like who are these people? They're thinking about it intellectually, like what is it that I would learn, or what would they teach, or what are their beliefs, or whatever it is, what is their vision? They're thinking about it emotionally. Would I fit in that space? Would that make sense for me? Right? All of that stuff is in there kind of swirling and churning as they're considering the possibility of a church. Now, you may not think about this, but if you've done this recently, you know this is exactly how it's done. The first contact any person has with a church, it's not physical. It's actually like more virtual. Right? They check out your website. They check out your social media accounts. They watch some videos as far as what you do and how you do it. And again, as they're doing that, whether it's conscious or unconscious, again, they're just running through assessments. Would I fit there? How would I feel there? How would I think there? What would I learn there? What would my family learn there? Would this be good for my kids? Would this be good for my spouse? Would this be good for me? I'm single. Would I find other singles there? Right? If they go to a webpage and it's just a bunch of stock footage of people that go to that church, they'll instantly know, like, those people are fake. Those are from someplace else. And so how do I know if I would actually find a home in that location? There's a lot going on there. But then what happens eventually? After looking at different accounts and pages and stuff like that, they land on 1 to 3 churches that they're going to go visit. And so they get up, they get into the family truckster on a Sunday morning, and they head out. And let's say they head out to Redemption Church. Here's the things that they're processing. They're like, okay, they meet in a high school? Is that legal? Can churches meet in high schools? You know, like, that's weird. And then they start to pull up to the school because the map on their car says it's right here, but they're like, is it the first driveway or the second driveway? And that makes them a little nervous, right? You're already nervous going to a place where you don't know people, but now you're like, first driveway, second driveway, you go into the first driveway, wrong driveway. All right, second driveway. Now which door? That side, that side, this side. Like, what do you do? And then they walk through the doors, and then suddenly you're in this room, and it says kids that way and adults that way. It's like, do I just send my kids that way? Do I go with my kids that way? Is that okay? Or do we just subdivide right now? And they take them over to the kids section. We have this awesome, like, safety and secure area for our kids. And so we print off this scan bar and put it on the kids' back, and they're like, they just put a scan bar on my kids' back. My kid's a grocery now. You know, go on in. Or it's like, isn't a scan bar the mark of the beast? That's a weird thing for a church, right? So, like, that happens. And now they're like, okay, now we go to the other side where the adults go. And as they're walking, they see donuts and coffee. And they're like, is that free? Or do I have to pay? Do they take cash? Because nobody cares cash anymore. Do they take a card? Do I need a card? What do I do? And then they come into this room and they see these chairs and they go, oh, man. Once I'm in, I'm never getting out, right? Thank you, Jesus, for the future hub, all right? So, but they're thinking that. And then they get into the middle, and then they're trapped. You better hope their kid's number doesn't come up on the screen, man. They got to do the walk of shame over like 17 people to get out of this place, right? And that creates some stuff. And then the music starts, and Trent starts saying, hey, stand up and sing with us. And they're like, okay, we'll stand and sing. And they're looking around like, that guy's singing, that guy's not singing. She's got her hands up. Do I do hands up, sing, or no sing? What do I do? Where do I fit? And I don't know these songs, but if it's epic and I just raise up my cell phone and be like, yeah, you know, like, what do I do? And then the pastor gets up there and he's like, all right, everybody pray with me. And he shuts his eyes and bows his head. It's like, why does everybody shut their eyes and bow their head? Like, does God appear when everybody's eyes are closed, and if you open them, he vanishes again? Like, is he there? And like, what's the story? Then the pastor's like, all right, open to the book of Job. They're like, I brought the book called the Bible. I didn't bring a book called Job. And then they're looking like, that's Job, not Job. That's spelled Job. It's the book of Job, man. Right? Like, the whole thing is loaded with all this stuff, right? And so basically what that teaches us is every one of those little migrations, every one of those little steps has this potential to either draw a person in more, like they go, oh, that calmed my concern, that calmed my fear, that calmed my whatever, or it can heighten it, right? If there's a bad iteration after a bad iteration, one little bad step after another little bad step, it can change everything. See, I know for me, I've visited a lot of churches. A lot of churches. And this is just me because it's my personality type. But honestly, as I'm driving up after I've done the whole website check and everything else, as I'm driving up, I probably start at about a -3. I'm already a little nervous and pensive and uncertain. Like, I don't know these people. They don't know me. I don't know if I'm going to fit, whatever else, even though I'm just checking it out. And even though I'm a pastor and I know how this gig goes, it's kind of that way. And whatever begins to happen next is the difference between moving me out from a -3 to 0 to eventually a positive, or if it's a bad experience, I will drop faster than I raise, right? And I've been to places where I'm like, instantly, I'm like, you're the not happy host at the door. And then when I get into the room, nobody identifies me. When I've been to churches where they literally have these stand up and greet, and I am left in the dust, man. I'm like, they're like, look at the leper, you know, like, it's, Right? So I get it. And so then pretty soon I'm like, all right, what's my Yelp review going to be for this place? No, it was funny. This week I actually looked up our Yelp review and our Google review. I've never done that before, never cared. We have a 5-star rating on Google. Woo! We have nothing on Yelp. Apparently the Yelpers don't go to Redemption Church. I don't know. But here's the thing with all of that. I don't have a concern about reviews. I'm not interested in making sure that we have a good review. I'm more concerned about making sure that we as a community of faith never mishandle a single person that decides to come and join us on a Sunday, right? And there's three reasons for that. First of all, I go, man, I don't want to mishandle anybody that took 2 to 4, maybe 5 hours of their life total between going online and then showing up here. I don't want to take a person that gifted their time to us to come and go, wow, that was a waste of time. In the end, we may not be their flavor for all kinds of reasons, but I don't want it to be because of how they felt coming into this place. If they go, that doesn't think like me, or those people are not like me, that's one. But how they feel, I want them to go like, man, there was something that felt different there. And if we mishandle that, it's just a missed opportunity. It's a fumbling of the ball right there at the goal line. The second reason I want to make sure that we have a sense of this is because if we don't get good, or if we're not really awesome at those who come to be visitors among us, it will set a cultural tone of, hey man, I don't know if I want to invite my friends because other people, when they come, they don't seem to fit. Would my friends fit? Therefore, I'm not going to invite my friends. That's why this is kind of ultimately important to me. But then the third is actually the most important. And that is a failure to be able to kind of pull people in and have this sense of like assimilation. If we don't do that, it undermines some of the core values that we believe Jesus has called us to exhibit. He calls us to serve one another. He calls us to love our neighbor. He calls us to basically display hospitality. And so as a church, then we go, this is important, because that's all a means of then bringing Jesus to our world. And so that big, long opening preamble takes us to the last stint in this series. It's all about our what. What we as a church seek to do, and what we ask every individual that considers Redemption Church their home, what we ask you to do as an individual as you join together in this place. Now, when we as leaders put this together, we saw it as a pathway. Right? Like a series of stepping stones, like these 4 pavers that we wanted a person to kind of move along. And all of this was kind of governed by this sense of feeling again, which I know sounds a little weird, but again, and using the restaurant analogy, you can understand, like, feelings are just a part of who we are, and it's kind of our first reaction to many things. And so we're like, well then, when somebody comes to Redemption, how do we want them to feel as they have contact? And the first one is huge for many reasons. It is the simple idea that when somebody comes into our space or somebody interacts with one of us in any capacity, we want them to feel welcomed. Welcomed. That is the core and key word. And this is really important. Even the ending. Notice that it's ED, not ING. Because what that sets us up for is not thinking about, hey, am I a welcoming person, but rather is the person in front of me feeling welcomed by what I do? Pastor Scott has a great motto: we choose to feel uncomfortable so you don't have to. It's so good, right? Because that's what we're concerned with. I was my first pastor gig as a lead pastor. The church's motto was the end of your search for a friendly church. And I said, is that true? And they're like, no, it's not. They're like, we've been so ingrown for so long. In fact, if anything, because you're young and we're hoping you bring some life, you'll get us out of that. Because our motto and our actions aren't the same. They were just very humbly honest about that. And again, like I said, I've been to many churches that would say, hey, we're welcoming. Hey, we're friendly. And I'm like, hey, I was left in the dust at the handshake thing, which is why we don't do it here, right? Like, you know, so uncomfortable anyway. But I'm like, there's a difference. There's a difference. Now, I'll tell you what's really strange about this for me. Of the many churches that I visited, I'll tell you the place or the places where I felt the most welcomed, and it's unlikely. I felt the most welcomed when I visited mega churches, which is strange. It's super strange because you're like, but that's a bunch of people. You go there to hide. I go, yeah, and for whatever reason, when I visited those places, so many of them made me honestly feel like they saw me as an individual. The individual was spotted, and they made investment. I mean, way back in the day, I remember before Eastlake kind of came apart, I visited them probably like 13 years ago on Sammamish Ridge. I was blown away. There were so many layers where I was welcomed and greeted and noticed, and I was like, they got that nailed. Over in Spokane, there's a place called Life Center, right? I'm like, you all got this down. For thousands and thousands of people, I feel like an individual. It was super strange. On the other side of it, right, and probably those are churches where I'd be less like, hey, that's my teaching thing, because I like a little bit more like Bible teaching and depth and things like that. But then I've been to churches where I go, you'd be exactly my ideological thing, but then they suffer from the ability to make one feel welcomed. Again, if anything, I felt more isolated in the process when I showed up. Why I think this is strange and why I use that word is because making people feel welcomed isn't simply a church growth strategy. I think I could get kind of thrown over there. I actually think it is a central Bible-backed mandate that Jesus will, in no uncertain terms by the end, tell us, we got to get this right and we got to nail this one down because it's so useful in so many different ways. Now, to start this off, I'm going to start with a pop quiz, all right? We're finally going to be getting into some passages here. So the pop quiz, it's a fill-in-the-blank. I want you to see the fill-in-the-blank, and I want you to think, what could be after this blank? It's the statement, the Son of Man came. That's good right there. That's a good Bible verse. That's right. There's some others, though. In fact, there's three times this is used in the entire New Testament. The first was what was said right down here, right? The Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. That's his why, right? If he's breaking it out like we do, he's like, man, that's my why, dude. I came to seek and to save. Sozo. I love that word, sozo, save, because it has so much bandwidth. I came to heal their soul. I came to heal their body. I came to heal their psyche. He is redeeming the whole person. That's what resurrection's all about. He's like, that's what I came to do, man. I came to be a restorer in that sense. That's his why. The second time this is brought up. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. This gets into his how. His why is to save. His how is like, man, and I'm going to serve them versus be served by them. I'm going to give more than I'm going to take from them. That's how I'm going to do it, right? But then the third is awesome. The Son of Man came eating and drinking. Is that not weird? You should be like, that's a little weird. Like you get these big ideas. I came to seek and save. I came to serve and rescue and ransom. And I came to snack and have some wine. Like it does seem a little odd at first. Like the other two seem way more bold and this one seems so like mundane. but it's not. Again, the first is a vision statement. The second is really a purpose statement. And the third is a statement of his methodology, his what he sought to do. And what he sought to do by leveraging food and drink is an environment that welcomed people. The table was a tool of making people feel welcomed. Now, here is the Bible scholar that gets to blow your mind. In the Gospel of Luke, let's see eating and drinking in Luke's Gospel, how much it comes up. That's a list. That is a huge list. It is wild how much Luke talks about Jesus eating, drinking, establishing table, hanging out with all sorts of people, right? All sorts of people. In fact, 50 times in Luke's Gospel, eating and drinking or a table or a meal comes up in the story. 50 times. That's not like, hey, Luke, can you break the cycle here? That's a little much. He's trying to carpet bomb an idea. Like, this should be important. In fact, I love the way Robert Karras put it. In Luke's Gospel, Jesus is either going to a meal, at a meal, or coming from a meal. It's just always in that space. But it's not because Jesus is like, I'm just a wine connoisseur and I like to snack. You know, it's not why it is. Or it's the incarnation, I figure I would get my fill. You know, it's not like that. In fact, another quote that I think is so good from Tim Chester, he says, meals are more than food. They're social occasions. They represent friendship, community, and welcome. Now, when you look at the list of Zara a minute ago, and it's actually in your notes today as well, you think about how Jesus leveraged that. He welcomed all sorts, man. He welcomed prostitutes. He welcomed traitors. He welcomed terrorists. You know, when you go Simon the Zealot, just say Simon the Terrorist, because that's what a zealot was, right? He welcomed the notorious sinners. He welcomed the powerless. And in like fashion, he also welcomed the Pharisee and the scribe and the lawyer. He welcomed the self-righteous. He welcomed the religious. He welcomed the powerful to the table. I think that is a profound idea that we want to realize, that when Luke brings up something 50 times, and in their cultural environment, that is this super taboo thing. Like, if you bring somebody to your table that somebody else considers riffraff, and you make table with them, they're going to think you're the sinner, which is exactly what Jesus gets accused of. Right? Exactly. Oh, he's friends of tax collectors and sinners, and that's because he makes table with them. He comes eating and drinking. And they go, pfft. Can't have him. And he's like, no, but that's what this is all about. I am making them feel welcomed so they can understand the essence and the nuance and the ethos of my kingdom and what it means for the world. And so we want to care about this. In fact, I wrote this week. When people have any interaction in any context with any person at Redemption Church, we want them to feel welcomed in our community of faith. We want them to feel welcomed. Not because it's Matt's agenda, because it's actually Jesus' agenda for all of us. And I'm going to give you four reasons today why it's important. If you're taking notes today in the app, the first is this. It's important because we are called to make people feel welcomed. Or if you like the word commanded, that would be just as equally usable. So it's interesting, again, in Luke 9, Jesus is just given like a very consolidated idea of what it means to follow him. So he says, hey, if you want to follow me, deny yourself, take up your cross daily, and follow, right? The most abbreviated gospel message you probably could find is right there. Deny yourself, take up your cross daily, and follow me. And so he lays it out. No sooner does he lay it out, his disciples start arguing about which one's most awesome, which I always think is funny. Like, he just said, hey, deny yourself. And they're like, deny yourself. That means exalt yourself, right? And so they all start exalting themselves. So it says then in Luke 9:46, as the disciples began arguing about which one is the greatest, Jesus knew their thoughts. So he brought a little child to his side, and he said to them, anyone who welcomes a little child like this on my behalf welcomes me. And anyone who welcomes me welcomes my Father who sent me. Whoever is the least among you is the greatest. Now, two notes I want to make about this here, because I think it's really important. Greatness, and I want you to pay attention. Greatness to Jesus is not simply being the least. Greatness to Jesus is being the least to those perceived to be the least, right? So you are coming under those perceived to be the least, and you are being the least to the least. Like, that's his idea of greatness. And I think that's beautiful. And you got to understand, in their culture, like, the way we see kids today was not like the way they understood little ones in their day. Like, we have a very sentimental attachment. I went to my daughter's dance recital yesterday. She danced right here. She was so cute. Anyway, so, right? And we're like, oh, they love the kids. They're cute and everything. But in their world, they did not see kids like that. They saw children for the first, like, 7-8 years of life as another mouth to feed and another human to take care of. But when you live in a world where infant mortality is high, you live in a world where food is scarce, like, children aren't necessarily seen the same. They were almost like, we got to get them along until they can kind of keep their own person and earn their own way. So when Jesus says, hey, I want you to welcome a little child like this, they're already processing, like, but they don't bring value for years and years and years. They're the least of these. He's like, right, come underneath them. Right? Make them feel welcomed. The second note that I think is really important about this is he links doing it to others as doing it to him. So I want you to entangle that right now. To do unto others is to do unto him. We're just going to log that for now because it's going to come up at the end. But it gives us the idea that God's image is in all, and therefore we welcome all because God is in all. And by doing this, we are demonstrating God's definition of greatness, according to Jesus. Therefore, to make a person feel welcomed, you ready? It's not about niceness. It's about holiness, right? It's about being different from the norm. In a world that says you're only welcomed unless you're X, Y, or Z, this is pretty radical, which is why Jesus is making table with all sorts of different people, right? Now he's got a mission, he's got a gospel, he wants to see things in their life, but it all starts, but man, he's got to make them feel welcomed and safe and secure so they can actually absorb what he's talking about. So it's important. Next, in relationship to all of this, is number two in your notes. We have a measurement for what constitutes making people feel welcomed. We actually can calibrate this, all right? So there's a scene in Luke chapter 9 where the apostles are all sent out, and then they all come back to Jesus. It's been a long haul. It's been a tough gig. It's been a rough ministry and everything else. And so Jesus is like, hey, let's get away. Let's just take a break from everybody for a while, right? And so what happens, though, is the crowds found where he was going, and they followed him, right? And yet what does he do? It says he welcomed them and he taught them about the kingdom of God and he healed those who were sick. What I love about this scene here is, again, everybody's beat, man. They're just trying to get a sabbatical right now. They just need a day to recoup, breathe a little bit, debrief about everything that's happened. But man, the crowds are in demand. And Jesus could have said, enough, listen, I'll be here tomorrow. Take a ticket. But he doesn't do that. He welcomed. He brought them in, and then he taught them about this crazy, counterintuitive, upside down and backwards message, and then he brought healing to their hurting persons. Thus, what Jesus does becomes our model. Paul said that in our reading today in Romans 15. May the God of endurance and comfort, or encouragement rather, grant you to live in such harmony with one another, in accordance with Christ Jesus, that together you may with one voice glorify God the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you for the glory of God. So good. Because all we need to do with that is to just almost be self-reflective. To say, to whatever degree I feel Jesus has welcomed me into his life, I am to welcome those around me into my life. That's it. And the Greek word here is proslambano, or you can say proslambano if you want to and just make it Italian. But proslambano is a great word. It literally means to go toward another with intention, to proactively go toward another with intention. So part of what it means to make people feel welcomed in the measurement is not, did they come to me and I made them feel welcomed, but I went to them and I made them feel welcomed. See, part of this is an engagement thing. You're not sitting around waiting for it. You're actually moving toward it. That takes us to number three. We have a range of who we are to make feel welcomed. And this range is both social and emotional. By social, what I'm saying is there's a whole spectrum of human beings out there, all the way from radical, hateful of our faith people to radical lovers of our faith people. There is your spectrum. Right? All the people in between that, whatever their background, whatever, that is the range that we are to make them feel welcome. And then there is an emotional range in there as well, which is we want to establish a state of mind as they feel welcomed. of this, 2 Corinthians chapter 7 says this. Paul's writing to the church, and he says, man, we were especially delighted to see how happy Titus was, right, when it came to the way all of you welcomed him and set his mind at ease. See, I love this because this is a fellow Christian. Titus knows he's going to Christians. Christians know a Christian Titus is coming to them. But there was still nervousness for Titus. And yet Paul's like, it's awesome because not only did you proactively go to him and have this intentionality, but you also set his mind at ease. He just wasn't sure what it was going to be like. He wasn't sure what you guys were going to be like, right? He was nervous about it. And yet, man, that is the range that we are to demonstrate. But it's to go all the way across the spectrum, right? Hebrews 13, he says, keep on loving each other as brothers and sisters. So that's what we do as Christians. But also don't forget to show hospitality to strangers. Show hospitality to strangers. And I love this because this word hospitality in Greek is two words, philios and xena, not warrior princess, something else, all right? So philios means friend, and xena means stranger, xenophobia, fear of foreigners, fear of strangers, right? So philios and xena are almost like polar opposites, but they get jammed together, and they get jammed together to tell us, oh, my job is to take a stranger, make them a friend. My job is to take a stranger and convert them to a friend. I am to be friendly to a stranger so that in being friendly to the stranger becomes my friend. It's that simple. And so this is more than a hi or a handshake. This is like a hearty reception. Like we're trying to figure out how to do that. And we do it because it's absolutely central to Jesus' priorities for our lives. It's absolutely central. I'm telling you, matter of fact, to make a person feel welcomed, you ready? It's in the top 10. Jesus' biggest priorities for us. Guarantee it. In fact, I'm going to put it at number 3 of at least a list of 6, which sounds weird, but trust me, all right? So number 4 in your notes, right? This is the seriousness of making people feel welcomed. It's like a serious thing. It's not just like, hey, commanded a good, nice, if we get it, great. No, it's a big deal. I share it this way. Jesus has a final exam, right? I've brought it up this many times. Jesus has this final exam, and he's like, on the final exam, the exam is really you. It's your life. We're going to examine your life. We're going to see what marked you and what you did and how you did it and everything else. And so it starts in Matthew 25. It says, when the Son of Man comes in all of his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne, and before him will be gathered all the nations. And he will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will place the sheep on his right. He will put the goats on his left. And then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from before the foundations of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Of the top 6 things on the test, Jesus has given us the test in advance. Like, I'm just telling you, here's the answers. You might want to study, right? Of the top 6 measurements, fed, hydrated, welcomed, clothed, comforted, and visited, he says, when you did that, you did it to me. You did it to me. Now, for the listener, they're like, how did we do that to you? How's that possible? And so the righteous will answer and say, Lord, when we just see you hungry or and feed you or thirsty and give you drink, when we see you a stranger and welcome you or naked and clothe you, when do we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And then the king will answer and say, truly I say to you, as you did to one of the least of these, which in Greek is of low dignity or small, when you did it to the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. See, this is so valuable because we do this to all. Because Jesus is embedded in all, somehow. I don't know how that works. It's above my pay grade. But he's embedded into all. And to fail at doing this toward all is to fail at doing it toward him, which is why he rounds it out. He says, I tell you the truth, when you refuse to help by way of feeding or hydrating or welcoming or clothing or visiting to the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were refusing to do it to me. Can I tell you what gets my attention there? He doesn't say, when you overlooked it, you just failed to do it. No, what's the word he uses there again? You refused. Whatever excuse we want to give, he's like, nah, save it. You refused. You knew, I put it on the test. You read it in your annual read through the Bible. You knew it was there. It's there. pretty strong. In fact, honestly, this is just a sidebar because you showed up, and watch out. So, but in the last couple of weeks, this passage really resonates with me a lot. Like, I focus on it a lot. And I even talked about it in my podcast this week where I'm like, there's 365 days a year. And we might live on average 80 years, which means we have about 29,000 days of our life. And I just really stopped and I thought, of the 29,000 days, how many of those days have I ever used to say, I'm going to figure out how to clothe those who need some clothing. I'm going to go to the homeless and try to help. I'm going to find some way to clothe the naked of my life and times. How many days of 29,000 have I done that? Right? Or how many days have I tried to figure out how do we feed the hungry or get clean water to those who need it? Of my 29,000 days, how many hospitals have I visited? How many convalescent homes have I been in? How many bedsides have I sat by? How many times have I stepped into a prison to care about those incarcerated in our system today? Right? Much less. How much have I gone on my way to make sure people feel welcomed in my life? See, just a moment of just like seriousness. Welcomed is the easiest one in the list. And I would encourage us to start there and work our way into the tough stuff. It can be done in all sorts of creative ways, but I think that Jesus puts this in here and lets us know that's on the exam. We should go, man, this is really important to him. All that stuff, including making people feel welcomed. So, as I round it out, then how can we do this collectively? Well, the first thing is maybe just for us as individuals, we need to be thinking about, man, how can I be that person that makes other people feel welcomed in whatever my sphere of influence, right? Like when you go to work or school or you're serving in the community or whatever it is, you go, man, I just want to be that person that people go, man, they make me feel welcomed. I would say be the friendliest person in the room to build friendships. Weirdly enough, even in Luke 16, Jesus talks about this. It's the weirdest little thing. He says, like, hey, use worldly wealth and influence to make friends and influence people. You're like, what? It's like, that sounds more like Joel Osteen than Jesus, but he's like, no, it works. Use what you have to make people feel welcomed, bring influence, and build friendships. When it comes to church, right, what it means is every Sunday when you show up, you're just kind of looking, because it's an all-team event here. Right? It's not like, hey, that's the superstars and they do it, or the hospitality team who does awesome, it's their job. No, every one of us should be eyes up looking around. Because when you see a person in the corner, you're like, I bet they're new. When they don't know quite where to go, you're like, I bet they need to feel welcomed. See, we can all collectively do it together because we're all collectively called to make that investment. In fact, if anything, I just close on the note that every one of us, myself included, because I'm not always great at this. I am not always great at this. But every one of us is on duty all the time. All the time. In every walk of life that we live, we're on duty. How do I make a person feel seen, noticed, and welcomed in whatever space I'm in? Let's go ahead and pray together. Jesus, we thank you that when you stepped into this world, man, you set a table. I even think about the story you tell where you're like, hey, man, you invite your friends, fine. Go out and invite those who are not your friends, that you don't know, that you don't have investment with. Welcome them to the table too. I pray that that is a tension that we all feel. I confess I don't always. I confess I'm an introvert, Jesus, and I love to lean into my, hey, I'm in it. What do you want? I'm built this way. And you're like, oh, so you refuse. I got you. You know. I pray that none of us refuse. I pray that we will be uncomfortable so others don't. I pray that we will be thinking about, hey, who do we add to the family? That we will be great at that. We know that we're not going to be for everybody, Jesus. We get that. But boy, can we try really hard? Help us to try really hard. I pray over us today that we try hard. Now, there may be some of you in the room today or you're watching online and you're need of feeling welcomed may be a little bit different. You go, man, I don't know Jesus. I'm not a Christian. I don't follow him. But I know that he came to make me feel welcomed into the family, to make me feel welcomed into his world, into his kingdom. If that's you, it's just a very base, heartfelt thing in you that says, you know what, Jesus, if I'm honest with myself, I know I missed the mark. I know I'm sinful. I know I do poor things that break your heart and hurt my life. I know that. I confess that to you. And Jesus, I know that you came and you lived and you died and you rose to deal with my problem, to free me from those things and to move me into your family, to give me your standing, your righteousness, forgive my sins and give me life with you. I claim that, Jesus. I ask for that. I seek you in that. Man, if you made that your prayer today, we want to know. On our app, there's a tile. You can let us know. There'll be a phone number on the screen that you can text to say, I made that decision to follow Jesus today, because we love that. We love that when people cross that threshold. Jesus, again, we thank you for your grace. We thank you for your challenge. We thank you that you disrupt our lives so often, but for awesome things. And so we praise you this day in your good name.